So good evening again. I thought I would talk about bowing tonight. We don't really bow much at Zenyu, and that's fine. That was a deliberate choice from the beginning. At Mountain Rain, we sort of offer a spectrum, I would say, a spectrum of formality. You know, we offer Zen session or intensive retreats in a pretty much monastic style on one end of the spectrum, and on the other end we offer sometimes workshops that have very little kind of Zen or Buddhist content at all, and no formality at all. Like sometimes we offer sessions on death and dying and illness, open to hospice volunteers and the general public, that kind of thing. And then Zenyu is sort of in between somewhere. I'll tell you how I thought of this topic. I took most of the month of January off and had on a sort of personal retreat, house sitting for a friend in Tsawwassen, who is actually off at a monastery in California for 3 whole months, very much immersed in the traditional Zen world at Tassajara. My retreat was, I meditated before breakfast and before bed twice a day, and did a lot of walking. But my main focus was writing, and so I was looking back. Part of the time I was looking back at a big backlog of my own writing, and I found this poem on bowing that I wrote years ago. And it got me thinking about bowing, and it got me thinking about Donald Trump and how Donald Trump needs to take up bowing practice. Highly unlikely, but I think I'll just start by reading you the poem on bowing. In the human pecking order, it's what servants and peasants do before kings, queens, and emperors, saying, "I am unarmed, pose no threat, expose my neck to your sword, put myself at your disposal." It's what we do in church on bended knee, if Catholic or Anglican, before God Almighty, or if Protestant, protests long quiescent, we bow our heads slightly, more pensive than humble, no longer even place palms together, that ancient gesture of non-duality. Just a slight nod, the thinking person's bow. No need to involve the body in anything so questionable as a full prostration before a graven image. A jealous god might be looking. Isn't there something atavistic in the act of bowing? We've all seen dogs groveling, scuttling up to the top dog, or us, their masters, grinning, tongues lolling, flinging themselves down, soft underbelly exposed, saying, "I am no threat. I trust you not to kill me. Let's play." If we are to survive as a species, I need you not to kill me. You need me not to kill you. Maybe a little more bowing wouldn't hurt the human race. To bend our animal bodies in common courtesy. The pause that makes space for mutual regard. Months after returning from Japan, I still bowed to elderly folks in Safeways, on sidewalks. Felt something missing in meetings and partings. Bowing to your Buddha nature, I offer my neck, my tender heart. Trust you not to kill me. Lean towards, not away, from all that you are. I bow to my own Buddha nature reflected in you, and yours in me, reflected in the wooden Buddha on the altar, the empty cushion before me, full moon's golden disc, 500-year-old red cedar, street kid slumped in a doorway, bank teller, bus driver, nurse, lover, stranger, neighbor. I trust you not to kill me. My small self dies, palms together. That's my bowing palm. When I came back from living in Japan and bowing became second nature, you bow even when you're talking on the phone. I catch myself still doing that here, you know, or bowing to some old lady in a Safeway. So the practice of bowing is one of the formal practices in Zen that people struggle with initially. Many people do. You know, ooh, it's not part of our North American culture. It's something we left behind, you know, in the old country as immigrants. We think of it as antiquated, and we associate it with hierarchical power structures. You know, I don't bow down to anybody. But palms together, you can't hit somebody with your palms together, can you? You can't raise a sword. Palms together over the heart. You know, it's a very ancient gesture of non-harming and trust. In Japan, this bow that we do, you know, that's used in Zen temples, is not the social bow. The social bow is arms straight down. You might have seen it in movies, or if you've been to Japan, the arms are straight down, and it's like this. And you do bow lower to someone who is above you in social position. You know, your boss or your academic advisor. You know, and yeah. So bows might look like that. But with this bow, it's, you don't get extra brownie points for bowing deeper. Sometimes people come to Zen practice and they're really, really zealous and they do these really deep bows, but that's actually not what it is. It's like equal. So as I said, I was thinking, you know, kind of cheating a little bit on my personal retreat and looking on the internet a little bit about what Donald Trump was up to. And, you know, I thought, he could really benefit from starting his day with 108 bows, as they do in Korean monasteries. And I did, once I spent a month at a monastery in Oregon, and they were doing that first thing in the morning before you do your very first zazen, you know, like 4:30 or 5 in the morning, we would all go to the zendo and do 108 bows. It really helps you be awake for your early morning zazen. 108 for the 108 delusions that we have theoretically, which is the formula goes the six senses, and mind is one of the senses in Buddhist thought. So eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, feeling, and mind. Mind is, so the six senses multiplied by past, present, and future, multiplied by internal and external, multiplied by positive, negative, and neutral is the 108 delusions. If you're here ever when we have our New Year's Eve retreat, we ring the big bell 108 times. That's to dispel the 108 delusions. But the main purpose of bowing is a kind of embodied practice of letting go of our self-focus. Yeah. A sort of bodily enactment of meeting Buddha nature reflected all around us. So it's an expression or an enactment of non-duality, almost the antithesis of hierarchy. There's a story about an old Zen master, Obaku, who was famous for always telling his students, don't expect anything of the three treasures. So the three treasures are?
Buddha, Dharma, Sangha.
Yeah, so Buddha, for those who are unfamiliar with the expression three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And Buddha means not just the historical Buddha, but Buddha nature in us, Buddha nature being unbounded by self-clinging. Yeah, free, liberated, and connected. So Buddha nature, so that's the first treasure is Buddha, the teacher, and Dharma is the teachings, right? And then by extension, the nature of being. That's all Dharma is. It's a description of the nature of being. And Sangha is the community. So in the Buddha's day, it would have meant the monks and the nuns, but by extension, the community. Community of people who practice together, and by further extension, the community of the world, beings. So those are the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that's also why often vows are done in sets of threes, one for each, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And so he used to say, don't expect anything from the three treasures. Another way that is said is, don't practice with a gaining idea. You know, the idea of getting something you can hang on to, like enlightenment. I've got it. And so one day, one of the monks, this same master Obaku used to bow all the time. He used to bow really a lot. And one day, one of the monks said, well, you are always telling us not to expect anything from the three treasures. So why are you bowing all the time? What are you trying to get? And the master Obaku said, I don't expect, I just bow. So we just sit. We just wash the dishes. We just bow. We just cook. We just chop carrots. We just walk. In monastic practice, there are little mindfulness verses that go with a lot of daily activities. For those of you who've done formal Zen meals, there's a little, you know, you chant a little verse as you open up your three bowls are wrapped in cloths. There's a bowl, a little verse that you chant before you open them up, and then another one before you eat, before you serve, and then others for washing. And then there's a verse for actually toothbrushing. There's a verse before you go into the bath, and you chant. And they're actually quite beautiful. And there's one for bowing. And this is the one for bowing. The one who bows and the one bowed to are boundless and still. My body and the other's body are in essence not two. May I attain liberation together with all beings, raising up the highest aspiration, relying on the ultimate truth. So that's actually would be the... If you in sets of Chinese characters, and so it sort of has a little rhythm that doesn't work so well in English, but you can make little mindfulness verses for different activities in your life that can kind of bring you to your present experience, and there's a whole book of them that we have had in the library. I'm not sure if it's actually there, by an American Zen teacher, Robert Aiken, He used to teach in Hawaii for many, many years. He lived into his, well into his 90s. And he wrote this little book called The Dragon Never Sleeps. And it's a collection of all his little verses. They're called gathas. And here are a couple that he wrote on bowing. He has them for all different situations. They're almost like little, the basic form is when I walk into a meeting at work and sit down, for example, I vow with all beings to, and then there's his, you know, intention. You put your intention for how you want to be, how you want to be awake on that occasion. So he says, when I enter the zendo and bow, I vow with all beings to dance the dream of the Buddha with my friends once again. When I bow with my sisters and brothers, I vow with all beings to freshen our intimate kinship and enliven the practice we share. When I bow to the floor, I vow with all beings. Funny, bow and bow, it's easy to slip and say the other one. When I bow to the floor, I vow with all beings to release my needless fixations and die to myself at last. In Zen, they often use that word die, you know, the small self dies, which means letting go of our narrow, constricted self and opening to our more spacious self, our more spacious existence. So it's sometimes a nice practice to make a little verse, mindfulness verse for yourself for some particular thing. Post it on the fridge or on your mirror. And those are just examples about bowing. I'll give you one more bowing verse. And it's from Uchiyama Roshi. Who was a Japanese teacher, and some of his books are translated into Japanese, into English, and some of us have read them. And this is a poem he wrote the day he died. Putting my right and left hands together as one, I just bow. Just bow to become one with Buddha. Just bow to become one with everything I encounter. Just bow to become one with all the myriad things. Just bow as life becomes life. So I don't know about you, but it seems to me that in our culture, our North American culture, maybe all over the world, that the basic sort of value of respect and civility is a state of decline. That basic respect, particularly towards those who are different from us in some way. You know, it's fine. We're not even that respectful to our friends sometimes, are we, in our culture? But it's certainly been, you know, especially evident this past year in the political arena. And it's easy to point fingers, you know, south of the border. Because it's been so blatant there, but members of our own parliament in Canada can be pretty rude and even shove each other around sometimes. So I really admire Elizabeth May and the Green Party, the Green Party leader, who has taken, I don't know if you know this, but she has really taken a stand in parliament for civility, for decent, you know, kind of respectful language and behavior, you know, and not screaming aggressively at each other. And I admire her for that. Because, you know, in a culture where self-promotion to the point of easy lies and easy falsehoods is the norm, humility becomes kind of wimpish. And so what do you think about that practice of mutual respect and humility. And bowing as a practice to remind us about that. When people come and express kind of serious reservations about all the bowing in Zen, I usually say, just kind of hold it as an open question. Don't analyze it to death. Feel what it's like in your body. And you don't have to be weird about it, but try in your daily life bowing to a few, like, trees or dogs, or take a stone that you really like and kind of just put it somewhere in your house and bow to it now and then. And after a while, you really start feeling quite a feeling about that stone, And you get a feeling of Buddha nature reflected back at you everywhere you go. And sometimes you might do a little inner bow to people on the bus or on the street. I do that. I do these little kind of invisible bows. So those are just a few reflections on bowing. I thought I would share with you as a result of finding this old poem that I wrote. So thank you for listening, and let's have some tea and hear what you have to say. Thanks.